to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no fixed action, Jack. I'm always Mr. Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures down 23. NASDAQ Futures down 111. Dow Futures down 126, which is right about where they were last night. So we'll see what this week brings. Last week was an interesting one, to say the least, although we end up sort of where we started, seemingly like all these weeks. But we're getting enough action to where you're at least concerned about where things are going, and we continue to have a drag up in gas prices. So maybe I go by the yesterday on my way to get gas early in the morning on Saturday. So I go by the Speedway, and it's 3:39, right? So I continue on towards the Myers, figuring it's probably the same price. And of course, it's 3:54, I'm thinking. How much am I going to get?
Is going it in the wrong direction.
Yeah, is it worth going back there? And then I'm thinking, if I go back there and I get coffee from the Dunkin' Donuts, it's 3:30. And it's, at the Myers, it's $1.75. Plus the lady in there, and I always banter about how her week went. She's in the hairdressing business, and you always get a different view of the world from people who, because all they do is deal with other people, more than I do, right? And so I figured, screw it, I'll just get 10 gallons. And because I had, you know, half tank anyway, which is a lot in the suburban. So I get some there, and guess what? When I drive past the Speedway on the way back, was 3:54. They raised it up to 15 cents.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so I'm almost like, okay. So we're up to 3:54 in the burbs, and seemingly going north. And I dug out if I can find it here, this early in the morning, I dug out a piece. Guess where? I think I might have scratched it here somewhere, but guess when the oil futures traded below zero, and there were tankers parked in our backyard full of oil, and the world was awash with oil. It was April of 2020. It was like 18 months ago. So explain to me how the hell we got from there to here in 18 months. The world was awash with oil, and now, oh God, there's these shortages. You won't believe it. We'll never be able to.
Is it all COVID related?
That's the only timing thing
that would make sense. But yeah, I don't see how that would.
Well, unless people thought nobody was driving, they totally cut back or something. I don't know, but it couldn't have been. That whole industry, you know, people. I don't know. I criticize too much, I think, but I think people that are young and on TV, they have no perception of time on these things. How long does it take somebody to like shut down an oil field for tankers to get from one place to the other, to go from being too many to too little? It's not 2 or 3 days. You know, you don't report about an oil shortage on a Monday and have it all be fixed by on a Wednesday. I mean, we're talking about projects and supply chains and things that are like, you know, how many months it take to get a new well gone? I mean, the rapidity of how we go from one to the other, at least in the news. It's hard for me to even imagine. I mean, there's got to be almost as much oil being produced now as there was back then. Maybe the COVID coming out and people not taking public transportation or something is causing way more people to drive than before. I mean, there's some answer there somewhere, but I don't think we've got it yet, do you? At least I don't have it.
Definitely not.
I don't think it takes all that much, really, if you have a combination of people driving more and then all of a sudden afraid that there's no oil, and like keep their tanks more full. I think that combination could cause a problem. They're claiming in Britain, a lot of it is oil truck drivers going from the refineries to the stations. And I still, after Friday, you weren't here, but Carl and I spent all kinds of time trying to determine, you know, where exactly all these shortages are coming from. And it appears there's this, you know, pushing 4 million people less in the labor force. And he's claiming there's actually less population which he's never seen before over like a 2-year period. The unadjusted numbers. Now, the adjusted numbers still show the population growth a little bit. I mean, I'll dig this up. Not that you're all that interested in it, but I'll dig it up some because it is interesting. We'll kind of go over a little bit what we talked about on Friday, but I'm looking at the A1 employment status. Now, he uses the unadjusted numbers, so his is more accurate than mine, but, well, let's put it this way. It's probably not, it's not more, the government doesn't think it's more accurate. That's why they adjust it, right? But Carl's always of the belief that you don't need a Christmas adjustment if you compare last year to last year. Every December has a Christmas, right? So he looks at it a little differently, but it's really kind of weird because I'm looking at these September numbers versus the last year. He's probably got them. I don't have like the February of 2020. So I got to go back to the December of 2019. And it shows really only, in the work, well, first of all, if you look at from 2019 to today, you've only got 2 million more people really in the population, which really should be like 2 million a year. Now, he claims the unadjusted numbers showed actually down. So the people available to work, over 16 and so forth, are in the workforce. There was 163, and now it's 161. So we're actually down people in the workforce, which is really strange, and which now people actually working, we went from 157.5 to 153.6. So we're down essentially 3 million people that are working, which could explain a lot of the shortages, right? But it's only 2%, right? Which I guess, but then we have a million more people that are 1.6 million that are unemployed. We've got almost 5 million more people in this we don't know what the hell they do count. Which seems to be the issue. I mean, who are these guys? I mean, are they homeless? Are they retired, which we're paying for them? Are they fled back to school, kind of like what I did in 74? Therein seems to lie the rub. We don't get anybody out of that column re-entering the workforce. It seems like if we had 2 or 3 million people out of whatever it is these people are, whether, it'd be nice to say if it was homeless, if it was people who unretired, If they gave people that are retired from the police force, we're not even saying you shouldn't get paid as retired, whatever. If you call these guys up and say, look, we need people in forensics, I'd like to come back and we'll pay you on top of your retirement. If we had the money, we could just do that, right? But somehow or another, it seems like we have to get, here I think is the problem, a problem. At the end of 2018, we had 155 million people working, right? We had 95 million people in this other column of, again, I don't think there was that many homeless back then, but you had retirees, you had people in school, you had all that kind of stuff. Well, now we've got 153 million people working, so we're down 2 million people working, and we're up almost 6 million people in that other column. Now, worst case is the people working are paying for a hell of a lot more people, and there's less in one column and more in the other. But maybe there just is this 4 million people is in the area of that we're just short people. Now, I don't know if you think 2% difference would make all that difference in the world. I mean, how did like in your brother's business? I mean, for those who don't know, Eddie's twin is a big time chef, but now he's working Northwestern, right, doing the stuff there.
Yeah,
but how did those guys go from everybody in the world getting laid off to now you can't find somebody, no matter how much you want to pay them? I mean, it seems like people must actually be gone, Matty. Does he ever comment on that?
The only thing he told me was that a lot of the back of the house staff, he said it's always easy to find front of the house. You can always find the hosts and hostesses who are, maybe college people that are, working through school or, part-timers or whatever. And then servers, because they usually make pretty good money in tips, and bartenders, you can always find them. It's the back of the house, the busboys, the dishwashers, the line cooks, those types of folks.
Line cooks, you mean the guys that are doing all the chopping and the vegetables,
exactly,
and all the hard work.
Exactly. Those folks are hard to find. And he said in his experience in Chicago, that's mostly Hispanic. Not all, but mostly. And he said they all went to work in construction because they can make more money. And they, it took COVID for them to realize that, you know, the restaurants were closed. They needed to work. They could work outside and construction never stopped. And so they all got jobs doing that and were like, wow, I'm making way more money doing this. And so they never came back. That was his anecdotal sort of.
I bet he probably doesn't explain 100% or he probably explains 30% of it. Easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And obviously that's not 100%, but that it makes a lot of sense in Chicago because I can tell you, you know, my neighborhood, I've said this before, every other house has a huge project going on right now. And it's all, not all, but mostly, Hispanic, guys re-roofing the house, building the deck, you know, building the garage, laying concrete, whatever it might be that they're doing. A lot of those folks probably were in the restaurant industry to a certain extent at some point in the near past.
Well, the guy here in the building, our buddy Salvador, he used to work for a fine dining place.
There you go.
I think he worked for it's a place that closed on Armitage. The guy over in the club, Vasquez, used to work for that guy. Charlie, was it Charlie Trotters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Used to work for those guys.
There you go. It's a prime example. It's you get in there because it's a job and you can do it. And, you know, it's nighttime hours, so maybe you can do some other stuff during the day. But then when you realize you're not making any money and it's still hard work and you can do hard work and make more money in the construction business, then it's probably a pretty easy decision.
I think we've also
Salvatore is also really talented.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a little different, but still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the guy can do anything. So, yeah, I mean, I think he told me that the guys who are doing the landscaping, you know, so they're up to 25 hours an hour for some of these guys. He goes to the point where, like people say in like Audrey's area, guys will come if you get somebody who likes you, they'll do your grass even for, you know even a pretty good sized house. I mean, you've been to her place, haven't you? I think, but it's a place. It's a Orland place.
I've not been there,
but it's. I think they do it for like $35, $40, and so Salvador says that there's no way you make money on that. He says the only way you can is if you're already doing a couple houses on the block. And all of a sudden you get a third house where you don't have to move your equipment. You can actually, you know, maybe spread the loss in the other two places. And, cause if you're charging somebody $35, $40, $45 and it's taking two guys, 45 minutes and you're paying them $25 an hour, I mean, it's easy enough to do the math, right? You're not doing so hot. And, or maybe if it's $22 an hour. But what they do is, the grass is kind of a loss leader. If all of a sudden somebody wants a big row of bushes or something, put in, that's where you make your money on.
Then, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Which makes, you know, makes sense. But, yeah, plus I think a lot of people, didn't have anywhere to go for a while and moved back. I think some of them either moved to another part of the U.S. or moved back to Mexico.
Oh, no doubt. And that's not just, the Hispanic population.
No.
I know a lot of people personally from all different backgrounds that took the opportunity to leave Chicago. Or whatever city they were in, to leave, you know, you're in a big city and, it's pretty confined and then you throw a pandemic in there and you're stuck inside of your small apartment with no outdoor space and in a city that has very strict COVID rules and you can't do anything. And maybe you were thinking of moving all along and you're like, well, this is as good as opportunity as any. I'm now working remotely so I can kind of do this from anywhere. I think a lot of people left for warmer climate, for less restriction on COVID, and went to Texas or went to Florida or went, you know, somewhere else warm. And I know some people that went to Southern California and Arizona. So there you go.
So what do you think would happen if your buddy Venkman, all of a sudden he feels nature's call, he lets you know he's got to go out, you got to wait for 6 elevators? How happy is he holding things back 3-4 times a day?
Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
No, it wouldn't be for him. It wouldn't be fun looking at him, much less being him.
Like, I've never lived in a high rise and never wanted to. I know you did for a while. That's never really been my vibe.
Well, there's a lot of advantages to it. I was at 70 West Huron, and I was, you know, working. I was on the board, so I was working. I had meetings every night. So I basically would walk out. I'd see the LaSalle or the Clark Street bus come, and I'd hop on, and literally 8 minutes later, I was at work.
And that's pretty damn convenient.
Yeah, or 10 minutes or whatever it was. Now, going home is different. I mean, the bus fights way home, so half the time I just walk. You know, or if I had a cocktail, I'd just grab a cab, and a cab was like $5, you know, so.
Right.
And you know, we were going out afterward. You're working out after work. We were going out, you know, when you're single. But the nice thing it is, we rented a house in Michigan City for a month every fall. And one year we had it all the way from Labor Day to Thanksgiving. Actually, a couple of years. And one year we had New Year's Eve down there. We had New Year's Eve down there at the Y2K. Well, so you never had to worry. All you had to do was lock the door and go. So there was never any thought of what if it rains, what if the gutters,
right?
In terms of that sort of stuff. Everything was good to go. You're pulling into a garage. Everything's clean. I love the engineer. The place was nice. And so you got that going for you. You know, so it'd be if, split this
plus
way.
There's usually some amenities in the building. Like,
yeah.
You know,
we had a workout facility. We didn't have a pool or anything.
But yeah, a lot of them have the workout. They have the pool. They have, maybe they have the grills on the roof or that type of thing. You know, the outdoor space that you can host people if you wanted to. There's usually a lot of good amenities too.
Well, I had a pretty good sized one bedroom, so I could have 8-10 people for dinner.
Oh, that's nice.
So, but the nice part about it is that part of the near north at that time was, there weren't even parking meters on the street. You know, this is 30 years. I mean, Audrey would come over and park her car in front of the place. You know, so.
Never do that now.
No, I know. So, I mean, for a time, I mean, I could see maybe somewhere in the future for you guys if, you ended up with a nice place in the burbs and maybe both of you still had a job downtown. I could see you with a studio on a high rise just for bad weather and for,
yeah.
There's
a lot of people that do that.
Yeah. So, how were you around a bunch of giddy, good-looking Iowa girls for the game Saturday? They came up big.
They did. I did watch with a group of people. Not all were fans of Iowa. They were just, you know, fans of football, so they were watching. But some were, and that was a fun game to watch. It didn't look good early.
No,
Penn State was moving the ball against Iowa. I don't know if you knew this stat, but Iowa has a streak going right now where they have not allowed more than 24 points for like 3 years.
I thought the offensive line was the key to the team.
It is. Well, it's the defense is the key to the team. The offensive line is the key to the offense.
Okay.
The defense has always been the key to the team, and they lead the nation or in the top five in the nation every year in takeaways. This year they're number one. And they don't allow points. Well, and you can win a lot of games even with a mediocre offense if you don't allow points. And so they have this streak going. Like I said, it's the longest active in the country. And Penn State had 14 in the first quarter, and Iowa hadn't allowed more than 24 in 3 years. So I was like, wow, this is not looking good. But then they started to slow Penn State down a little bit, and then their offense started to figure out a little bit, and then it was 17-10, and then they hurt Penn State's starting quarterback with it was a clean hit. They hit him, and it looked like to me they hit him in the ribs. And then when they put the backup quarterback in, he just...
Was it a helmet in the ribs or regular?
It was a shoulder into the ribs. I mean, it was just a regular linebacker, you know, blitz, hit the quarterback. And didn't even look like he was injured, actually, at the time. And then he left the field, and then on the sideline, you know, they must have looked at his ribs, and I don't know if he broke his... I'd have to read up. I didn't see what the actual injury was, but that's just what it looked like when I was watching it. But they put a backup in who was a freshman, and that place was loud, and he was a deer in headlights. And Penn State couldn't move the ball the rest of the game, and so Iowa was able to come from behind and have just enough offense to win, because Penn State's defense is really good, and Iowa...
How did Penn State get so good all of a sudden? Where do you get all these guys? I mean, we're all going
they're
to
good. They're Michigan good pretty much every year, though.
But they've been...
I mean, last year they had a down year during COVID, but Penn State's been a top 10 or 15 team more often than
they not. Because Ohio State and Michigan draw out of the same kind of the same pool, and Ohio State's been kind of kicking ass doing that for a while.
Oh, yeah. The Ohio State's head coach has never lost to a Big Ten team before. He's 20-0 in the Big Ten so far. I mean, it's unbelievable.
What about Alabama getting spanked?
That was great. Loved it.
And, so
against a very mediocre Texas A&M team, too, that has a lot of talent, but was 2-2 going into that game.
And the Irish are the worst 5-1 team ever.
Yeah, I didn't see the game. How did they do against Virginia Tech? I saw they won.
They were losing. They were down by 8 points with 3 minutes left and scored a touchdown, tied it, and somehow Kevin said Virginia Tech comes in and was very nice to him and has... There's like three, they get the ball and they do three incomplete passes, get the ball back with a minute something left, and the guy kicks like a 50-yard field goal to win.
Wow. Well, 5-1 is 5-1.
Yeah, and a couple of my buddies, the one guy lives in Virginia, he went to the game. He said, it is incredibly loud. I mean, talk about it's a real home field advantage.
Yo, I've heard that's one of the better stadiums in college football. Our buddy Natachi said he was going to the game on Twitter.
Yeah, well, I bet he had a nice time. But they're really into it, I guess, the Virginia Tech people. It's in some guy, what is it, in Lordstown? I mean, it's in
Blacksburg.
I mean, it's out in the middle of nowhere. And the town is the college.
Oh, yeah.
It says right on Google, the most dominant thing in Blacksburg is Virginia Tech. I'm like, duh.
Well, I think most college towns are probably like that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, not the big ones, but the little college towns across the country. I mean, you take the university away, and I don't think there's much less.
What do you think in MLB playoffs? I mean, the Sox are... I was giving up for dead last night, and all of a sudden they came back off the grave, and now, you know, who knows? But
well, I watched the majority of that game, and it was the fifth inning.
It was like, well, 3 hours.
Yeah, through the first four innings, I mean, there was 15 runs, and there was a million pitching changes, and there was an argument with the umpire. I mean, it was legitimate 3 hours, and then the next five innings, like, shot by. All of a sudden, the relievers came in. It was 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and then the Sox were able to tack on a couple of insurance runs late, and they ended up winning 12-6 and winning big. But that was a strange game. It felt like it was two different games. You had the first half of the game took 3 hours, and then the second half of the game took an hour and a half.
What do you think of the play where the ump got taken out and the guy got hit by the ball?
Well, I mean, they said that Grandal, the guy that hit the chopper to first, that was clearly not in the baseline. They said he didn't break any rules by doing that. But it was clear to me he was purposely trying to make that throw as hard as possible. And sure enough, the throw hits off his shoulder, and the run scores, and all mayhem breaks loose, and that was a big play.
Well, if the play's on you for a second 45 feet on your way to first base, you got to be on that. In that little area,
right.
or for you, that's what those two lines are for. When you first head out, depending on how your swing is, you can take whatever route to that first 45 feet, sort of as you want. I mean, if your swing takes you halfway to the pitcher's mound, I guess you run from there.
Yeah. So I mean, if you got a guy on third base and you know that the guy's going home, you might as well run in the grass like he did and make that angle as hard as possible. Although you might take a ball right to the face.
Well, that's a problem. Yeah. I mean, that's I mean.
You well, know, you kinda, if you run with your head down, then, you know, it hits you off the helmet.
Well, that's why
fine.
People slide at second base even when they're out. They don't want to get bonked in the head.
Yep.
But you know, I think there's somewhat of a difference, even though I didn't mention it last night. I remember way back when Reggie Jackson was the ball to first base when he got hit. The thing there is he was already out. So after he was out, it's incumbent upon him to get the hell out of the way.
Right.
Or last night, I mean, the guy, I mean, he doesn't have to worry about a play being made at the plate, you know, type of thing. I mean, if he went out and got between the pitcher and the first baseman, and if they're playing on him, yeah, that's a problem. I don't think, as goofy as it is, I don't think it's an issue. But I have a question for you.
Well, it clearly wasn't. I mean, no. The umpire explained it to Dusty. Dusty was pissed, but it's not. He didn't break the rule.
I got a question for you. The one where the ball went up the middle and the pitcher kind of, I don't know if he threw his mitt at it or the mitt just came off his hand. What if the mitt
I didn't
hit
see that one.
Yeah, he just... He went to go after a one hopper and the mitt came off. And of course, the guy goes, he threw his mitt at the ball. I don't think he did. I think he just came off. I'm going to ask you and many of the listeners, what if it would have hit the ball? What's the penalty?
I've never seen that before. I don't know if
it's ever happened.
Is that a written rule?
Oh yeah.
Okay, what is it?
The three bases.
Really?
Yeah.
If you're a fielder and you throw your mitt off your hand and it hits the live ball, then the batter is automatically awarded three bases.
Yep.
I never knew that.
I think if it's like your cap or something, I think it's two, but I know a mitt's three.
Even if it's a ground ball to third.
Yeah, if the guy wings the mitt in the hole and when the mitt hits the ball, it's three bases.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I bet it's never happened.
And so all the base runners get three bases too. Wow.
I bet it's never happened. But the... Well, Sox show they still, what are the, I lost track of the rest of them watching the Bears. Did the Bo Sox win or lose?
Bo Sox won.
So they're 2-1?
So they're up 2-1 against the Rays, which is, they won in 13 innings, on a two-run homer walk-off.
Now there's no man on second, right?
Right, yeah.
That's gone.
Yeah, that's gone. So they're up 2-1. The Dodgers, I believe, are 1-1 with the Giants. So that's been a good one as well. And the Brewers and Braves are 1-1.
All right, so the National League plays today.
Yes. All four games are today. So we got baseball beginning at noon today with the Brewers and Braves. Sox and Astros are at 2:30.
So tomorrow the American League's off.
Rays and Red Sox are at 6, and then Giants and Dodgers are at 8:30. So that's a full slate today. And then on Tuesday, the American League is off.
Assuming they have everything they play for yet.
Yep.
Because they both could be done tonight.
That's right.
The Sox are what time? They're 3 o'clock again, right?
They're 2:37 today. So you play till almost midnight last night, and then you're back at it at 2:30 today.
That's wow. S&P futures down 16, NASDAQ futures down 90. Coming back a little bit. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley's Mr. Merrill Weber. S&P futures down 16. NASDAQ futures down 88. That's actually up a little bit from when we came in. Dow futures down 73. They were down over 100. But they are back somewhat here. We're in Asia. Interesting over here. We've got Nikkei up 449, which is 1.6%. Shanghai unchanged, and Hang Seng up 487, almost 2%. They are up as METUAN shares surge. Whatever that is. Meituan shares surge. In Singapore's travel-related stocks soar. I have no idea why the hell travel-related stocks all of a sudden be going up. DAX down 56.4%, FTSE up 22.3%, CAC around up down 17.3%. So not much. They had a big choppy week last week like we did. Now they're kind of sedate today. Friday, Dow ended up being down 8 points, S&P down 8, NASDAQ down 74 for being up all day. So again, it was up, down week. Probably 3 days, maybe four, where the S&Ps were down or up 65 points during the day and then closed up or down like 40 to 50 with a little bit of comeback, whichever direction it was on the close. Very, really strange. I mean, I've seen that happen a lot when we're down, up or down 20, but down 60, that's a lot. Bonds, 10 years up four basis points, 1.61. The Bund, plus 2 to minus 0.112. Are we going to make another run towards zero here? Japan, 0.09, heading toward 0.10. Wow. Oil, up 265 at 3.3% to $82. Brent up 211, 84.50. Natural gas up 20 cents, 577, but still not over 6. RBOB up 4 cents, 240 as I had to pay 354 yesterday to gas up the Suburban. And we've got gold down $3, 17.54. Silver down 15 cents, 22.55. Copper up 6 cents, 433. We have Bitcoin at 56,446. That's up $1,000. Many Air Force traffic, weather, sports, and so you walked right by the big crime scene and didn't not even know it on yesterday morning, eh?
That's right. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of crashes, one on the south side, one on the north side, that are causing major issues here on a Monday morning. We'll start down south. There's a crash on the inbound Dan Ryan just before 95th Street. A three-vehicle accident that's causing significant delays that's currently blocking the right lane. But that's causing major delays if you're coming in on the Ryan, so keep that in mind. And then up north on the Kennedy outbound side, we had the outbound lanes completely closed at Bryn Mawr earlier. They're now reopened, but there's solid traffic in both directions because you have gapers as well just before Nagel Avenue to the outbound crash. So both sides of the Kennedy, if you due to an earlier crash at Bryn Mawr, is pretty jammed up. So once you get past that, more into the city, then it actually clears up. But out to the northwest, the Kennedy's not looking great either. Eisenhower and Stevenson are all quiet. Same for the Bishop Ford and I-57. Lakeshore Drive is looking good after, of course, we had the Chicago Marathon yesterday. And no crashes out in the suburbs. Weather today, it's going to be nice early, and then some thunderstorms are going to roll in this afternoon. It could affect the White Sox game, so we'll keep an eye on that. But we'll reach a high of 78 with rain in the forecast later on. Right now, it is mostly clear and 73 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 86 today. Right now, it's clear and 61. In sports, don't look now, Chief, but the Bears are above 500. They've now won two in a row and got their first road victory of the season as they handled the Raiders in Las Vegas. 20-9 was the final in that one. Justin Fields was not really asked to do too much except kind of manage the game, and he was okay at that. He went 12 of 20 for just 111 yards, did have a touchdown, no turnovers. It was good enough for a 92 QB rating. Andy Dalton got in for one snap when Fields tweaked his knee, but Fields came right back in after Dalton completed one pass for 8 yards. As far as the running game was concerned, it was good to see rookie running back Khalil Herbert, 18 carries for 75 yards in David Montgomery's absence. And then the starter was the veteran Damon Williams, who was also good, 16 carries for 64 yards and a touchdown, both of them averaging between 4 and 4.2 yards per carry in David Montgomery's absence. So congrats to the offensive line. They played really good ball. The Bears' defense was the story, though. They did get some turnovers. Roquan Smith led the team in tackles with 10. Khalil Mack had a sack and also had 8 tackles himself, and he had a sack on an extra point, which, of course, you don't get credit for that in the stat book, but that was a big play. And DeAndre Houston Carson, as I mentioned, got the interception for the Bears' defense. So the Bears are now 3-2, and they'll welcome Aaron Rodgers and the Packers into town next week, which should be fun. The Cardinals are undefeated in Arizona. They beat up on the 49ers 17-10 to improve to 5-0. Sunday Night Football, it was the Bills in Kansas City all over the Chiefs, 38-20. Chiefs were never in that one. Major League Baseball, as we talked about, the White Sox stayed alive. They doubled up the Astros last night, 12-6 in a marathon game down on the south side. They now trail the best of five, 2-1. So they'll look to even up the series this afternoon, weather permitting. It's a 2:37 Central Time first pitch. Carlos Rodon will take the hill for the Sox. And lastly, Chief, I don't know if you've been following this, but the Chicago Sky, WNBA women's basketball team, are in the finals And they played game one last night, and they blew out the Phoenix Mercury 91-77, and they lead the best of five series 1-0.
Where do they even play here?
I think they play down at UIC in that that little arena.
All right, because I know some of them.
It's a really nice arena to watch a game too. I don't know how many people it holds, maybe 2,000 or 3,000. But
there have been alligators hurling allegations that they sometimes hang out at the bar across the street here.
That could very well be. Not too far away.
Jan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
I'm all right. I have to quiz Mr. Weber here on two things. In the sports world, since all these guys are your age now, I can give you shit. When the Raiders have probably four or five in succession roughing the passer penalties, you think the two morons in the booth at least drop the story? I don't expect them to say they're trying to take out the quarterback. But when they go to the sidelines and no coaches complain to them at all, it should be obvious to them that the team is not very concerned about those penalties. They're encouraging them.
I'm with you on that. They absolutely were trying to hit Fields as much as possible and didn't care if it was late.
And but that's not politically correct if you ever want a job with the NFL again?
Good question. They certainly didn't mention it.
The other thing is, if I were you, I wouldn't ever expect your dog to get a day job as you guys walked by a five-person shooting crime scene, and he didn't pick up a sniff of anything other than some girl dog.
Yeah, we, of course, we live in Bucktown, right at kind of Armitage and Damon there, and we walk the dog all over the neighborhood on the weekends. We like to take a nice long walk on Saturday morning and Sunday morning, because during the week we don't really get to... I mean, during the week, we just kind of take him around the block, but during the weekend, we like to take him on a long walk. And just so happened, Sunday morning, we walked all the way down Milwaukee Avenue, down to Division, and then back west, and then up Damon, and it was a great, great, you know, 3-4 mile walk. And little did we know that 5 or 6 hours before that, there was a big shooting on Milwaukee, apparently, and we walked right through it and had no idea. You wouldn't have known. There was no tape. There was no signs of anything.
We got the weekend off to a great start, John. I don't know if you've spotted this. Friday afternoon, let's see, 4:20, 4:40, 4:45, 4:45, two there, 5:40, 5:40, two there, actually three. So we had a three-person shooting at 60th and Ashland. Again, this would be national news or worldwide news if it happened in London. What happens here, we don't... What's our number? We got to have like 7 or 8 before it even reaches the news. So before the sun even went down on Friday, we got 10 before it's even dark. Isn't that special? Now, on Saturday, see how many we have during the... Not hardly any during the day. We actually didn't have anything from 3:30 in the morning to 5:55 in the afternoon.
We got to sleep sometime.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't rain or anything. But still, a couple at 6 o'clock at 2500 West 70th, right in our old hood, pretty much, John. At 7:15, somebody got killed at 2800 South Kildare, the little village. So that's like 28th and, what, Pulaski?
Yeah.
Male 45, 7:15 gets blasted. And then on Sunday, what do we got? Not too much so during the day. You think you were safe on a Sunday during the day, but well, there's the 5 on Milwaukee at 3:40 a.m., and we made it from 5:20 a.m. to 1:35 in the afternoon. Well, there was kind of a break there. It wasn't the Bears. What was that break for? We don't know. Everybody was tired from the night before. It's pretty darn strange. And I see no perceptible change in the police on the expressways. I mean, there was a shooting on the Eisenhower Friday night, I think. You still don't see a police car. And yet we spend the whole weekend worried about firing the Park District guy because of alleged sexual harassment of lifeguards, you know, 10 years ago or something. Which maybe there were, and maybe ignored him, and maybe he's an idiot, I don't know. But how does this mayor call for anybody else's resignation, John, except her own?
I'm with you, Tom. This micromanaging of stuff, not that sexual harassment is an insignificant point, you know, in your job performance, I don't mean that. But to just lay in on that when you have to cut through, you know, life-threatening situations all over the city in order to focus on that and to just divert people's attention from stuff that, you know, requires more than just demanding somebody's resignation. I find it incomprehensible that this mayor or a lot of other mayors today can get up in the morning and look at themselves in the mirror and say, what a good mayor am I? How can they ignore the important stuff that is making people leave the city in droves and the people who are left behind demoralized about it? That's the worst thing I'm finding.
Well, I mean, I don't, this whole thing with, I'm listening to, driving around on Saturday, of course it takes forever to get out to Audrey, so I'm listening to News Radio 78, and I must have heard five times about some second grade teacher in Maryland that demanded some young Muslim girl take her, hijab, is that how you pronounce it? Scarf off, and I'm thinking, well, first of all, if somebody did that without any kind of reason, that's pretty ignorant. I mean, I don't know of anybody I've ever known that would do that. I mean, at least I hope not. But you don't hear any part of the other side of the story, if there is one. But how exactly is that national news?
It's not.
That's like one of us getting smacked with a ruler by the nun in second grade in the South Side. I mean, is that going to be Los Angeles radio for the next 8 hours?
I think it shows the low opinion that the people who do the programming and the setup for the news have of their audiences. They expect people to be consumed by this kind of stuff, and that's pretty much, you know, what they put in first position. And everybody picks it up, and everybody is expected to say the same stuff about it and believe the same stuff about it. And there's no investigation or no inquiry as to, you know, other things that went into this, and, you know, what's the significance of it, and what did we miss while we were reporting this? So it shows a complete callousness towards the public, and maybe the public deserves that kind of treatment, but I don't think they all do.
Well, the idea that we spent, that the deal the government made last week to turn the markets around was to borrow only $460 billion in, what, the next 4 weeks, 5 weeks? That's not news, because nobody can understand that. But by that time Saturday, we'd had 20-some shootings. That's not news. Right? I mean, meanwhile, you have people that want no more part of it. Allstate now, they got people working at home that want, not sure if they want to come back. They're selling their Northbrook office. Does the title, the entire implosion of the downtown area, is now all of a sudden you got a guy wanting to spend $1 billion on trains coming into downtowns when there are no more downtown? I mean, we're losing a city here, and we can't find a piece of news other than some second grader in Maryland, which should be the people in Maryland's business. Not that it should happen, but really, I mean, what? The economic stuff is nowhere. I mean, last night I had dinner with a client and a couple of his buddies. Pretty interesting group. One of the guys had just come back from Afghanistan. He'd been there 11 years as an IT guy, John. So, you know, had a house over there that he lived in a whole bit. And I could have talked to that guy for a week, right? But real nice guy, and we ended up, we went to the Brazilian steakhouse out in Oak Brook, which is interesting. I've only been to those things like 20 years ago when they first opened. I hadn't been to one in a while. They're a trip. The place is crowded, and a lot of families. And guess what? Look like a lot of people from South America. Go figure. You know, the Brazilian steakhouse, there might be maybe some people from Brazil there. Wouldn't that be a shocker, man? You know, so it's like, hey, there's some Mexicans in this Mexican place, or Irish in this Irish bar. Imagine that, you know. Anyway, but it was a fun time. These guys were in, of course, I did have to ask him if you know, Americans were able to get out of Afghanistan, and he said, yeah, oh yeah, every American who wanted out got out. He said the only problem is the planes couldn't land because there were so many people on the tarmac. He said we probably had to do it over again. We wouldn't have abandoned that one base. He said, but everybody got out. He said, the only people who didn't leave were people who actually married Afghanis and had families and stuff and decided to stay, even though they, you know, it's not the best. He said there are a few people that might have been, veterinarians or something that stayed because they had a million dogs to take care of and so forth. He goes, but basically anybody who wanted out. But one thing was interesting, it didn't hit the news. He said, the Taliban didn't want us out. He goes, they wanted us to maintain the embassy and everything because they some of them want to be part of the world. And if there's nobody there, I mean, they can't be. Plus, there's a lot of American money there. There's a lot of stuff. He goes, they wanted us to maintain our embassy. And he said, they were not the guys. He said, they didn't kill anybody, Americans. He said, the people who did that were a splinter group. And the Taliban was not too happy about it. And they don't like the fact that we're all gone, which is, I hadn't heard that opinion from anybody, had you?
No, but I would, believe it because not everybody in Afghanistan is, you know, can have a very good opinion about where the country would be headed without some kind of involvement by, you know, a major power, because their history tells them that this is, you know, they're really a nomadic people that have never put much importance on having a representative government. This is maybe our mistake in assuming that we could do this and that people would be just crazy wild to get it. But certainly there are people who know the world and know what's going on elsewhere and don't want, you know, their country to be, you know, a provincial backwater or not to emerge into, you know, a more developed world. So you have to kind of think about their prospects now. What kind of security do they have? And you create a vacuum like that, and you make the possibility pretty good that there'll be worse people in there than the Americans before long. So,
yeah, I mean, the Chinese, the Russians. I mean, that's what the conversation was last night. That it's the guy thinks we might be entering somewhat of another Cold War type of thing, where it's a three way Cold War with China, us, and Russia. Everybody's jacking for positions, and all these smaller countries trying to make inroads into some of the raw materials, and the wars will be like, you know, sort of like Vietnam and the Spanish Civil War and that kind of crap, where we're doing stuff in other places and there's wars, but we're all sort of in them but not really in them type of thing. Like, he didn't think we were gonna, you know, we were gonna actually have a war against China, you know, type of thing. But China's gonna start something up someplace, and we'll of course have to be there on the other side, sort of like we were with Russia forever. And Russia's not, they're dying to get back into that game too, right? So I don't know if that augurs well for the future, but I guess as long as there's no, you know, major war, I guess everybody's safe, right? I mean, at least thinks they are.
Yeah.
I don't know what the future holds, but, you know, what did you, I don't have a chance to listen in on a conversation with Carl on Friday. Where are you coming down on this labor stuff? I mean, Manny and I were talking about it earlier, and we think some people are gone. We think a lot of, you never really know what the message is when everybody keeps talking about they can't hire people. I mean, I find, Jen, that we talked a little bit on Friday or Thursday about it. I find that I don't have any sort of, being an economics guy like I am. I want to know what I can compare things to. I mean, when they talk about the port of Long Beach, you know, can't get people, can't get truck drivers. I mean, someplace, I'd like to be able to read. Can they get the information before I cause blame and sort of cast aspersions? But have you read anything? I mean, I'm going back to a simpler time. Are we ever going to get a Time Magazine, Newsweek, U.S. News World Report thing dropped on our door again? We're in the middle of the thing. There's a 10-page article about here's the dynamics and the demographics of the Long Beach port. And in 2019 in June, there were 8,000 people at work there, and they were all making, you know, $40 an hour. And all of a sudden, we had the COVID, and 5,000 people went home, but now only 2,000 came back. So instead of having 5,000 people, we've got 3,000 people, and they're trying to pay people $80 an hour, and they still can't get them, you know, because it's costing so much more to offload the ship, from what they say. I mean, I really don't even know what it costs to offload a ship before versus now, but it would seem odd to me that, you know, if you're getting 10 grand, which is probably low, to offload a ship now, and you were getting five before, that you can't give people a raise. Or where the hell is everybody? Are you looking for crane operators? Did they all retire? I have not read anything anywhere in any one of these areas where somebody actually took it from the top, got all the information, and explained to me, Lucy, what the hell's actually going on. I mean, is it just so people can talk on TV without anything behind it, or what? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine that at no price will somebody learn these trades. Or do they think they're learning them and all of a sudden they'll be laid off again in here? I mean, I don't know, but it sure seems like, in the same time, you're tripping over bodies walking down the street here. I mean, something doesn't add up, and I just can't, I don't know. Maddie's been trying to help me out because his brother knows and things, and just some different industries here, but I'm just confused. I mean,
well, I did listen to you and Carl and to Matt earlier, and thank God this your show, Tom, because nobody else seems particularly struck by any of this or is even attempting to make any sense out of it. like Carl, I think that there is some kind of vanishing factor here where people are just gone. And they've not gone to another place maybe where they're being
counted.
Do you
think they're dead?
Or being counted in the same way as they were before.
John, I think they're dead.
I think some of them may be dead, although it doesn't show in the mortality statistics, you know, that there's been a huge uptick, nor really was there an unusual uptick during the whole, you know, COVID racket for the last year and a half. So I don't think it's deaths necessarily. I do think that because life expectancy is dropping, and dropping for women too in this country, it seems, that there is, you know, an acceleration of people who, you know, are bowing out of the whole system earlier than they used to, and they don't form part of the labor force, and if they saw an opportunity to get out, if they could survive without having the job they had before, and it was getting harder to keep that job if there were vaccine mandates or whatever, they might have decided, well, I'm just opting out of this completely. But I think some of them probably have moved, some of them have died, some of them have gone overseas, and there's the penetration into the numbers is big enough where somebody should be thinking, you know, we got an urgent problem here, that the things have always been out of whack to some extent when you had, you know, the labor numbers that showed people not in the workforce, and you got these beautiful unemployment rates that made absolutely no sense at all, and we're kind of back in that mode too. But now we've got a huge disruption in our ability to serve people. The retail industry is in total chaos, it seems. You can't plan ahead. You can't plan 3 months ahead, it seems, for the workforce. And that's bad for business all the way around. And somebody should be hitting a couple of panic buttons about this to at least get a handle on it. And there's no urgency.
No, none whatsoever. We just talk about it. Manny, if you had to guess, again, even though you're not your brother, you talk to him a lot, if you had to guess, compared to the day before Thanksgiving in 2020 when all this happened, Thanksgiving, St. Patrick's Day, sorry, how many less jobs do you think there actually are in Chicago in that whole hospitality, people serving at McCormick Place, people serving in restaurants? On a scale of 1 to 100, how many jobs do you think that are less if you take the places that have closed and the hotels that still aren't fully staffed?
God, I don't know. I mean, is it down? I mean, at its worst, I'm sure it was down more, but right now, I think a lot of them have come back, not all. I don't know, down 35-40%. I mean, yeah, it's a huge number.
Yeah, so how could there, even if a bunch of people went to construction and everything else, how can we not fill 60% of the jobs?
That's a good question. It obviously doesn't add up.
You are more in tune with the new news than Jan or I. Jan probably better than me, but I just zero in on the stuff that affects my clients and we talk about on the show. So I'm like, say big economics and stuff that's going to move people's money that I'm managing, that I really care about. But just in terms of the news, where can we get this information? Think anybody has it, or everybody's just talking?
I mean, I'm looking at the same numbers you're looking at. What other numbers are there?
I mean, have you read about how many businesses, restaurants, and stuff? I mean, I thought maybe, you know, Clay probably, he was here, he'd probably tell us, but how many restaurants haven't opened up, and how many jobs that means, or how many people are working at the whole McCormick Place, Conrad Hilton, you know, all those places, convention places that are serving coffee to people in the morning and donuts and God knows what else they do all day long. I mean, how many less people are actually, it's still got to be down, like you say, 40%.
Yeah, I mean, when you look in the neighborhoods, there's still one out of every three or four places is closed. Or, I mean, I live in Wicker Park, Bucktown area, and we walk down the street every day, and there's a couple places that are coming back, thank goodness. There's a great Japanese place on the corner that has been closed for over a year now, and they announced that they're finally coming back, and they've cleaned the place up and have the lights on again, and hopefully they're opening soon. But there's for lease signs or out of business signs, or there's places that went to carry out only and just have a big empty dining room right now, and they're all over the place. And that's not even talking about downtown, that's in the neighborhoods. Downtown, all of the little coffee shops and lunch places, they have to all be closed.
Yeah,
because there's
still a place here to get breakfast.
Yeah, there's no people to serve. And I ride the train every day, and the blue line that I take every day is about half full. The other day, I had to take the purple line for some reason, and there was no one on it. I mean, zero. So, I mean, the trains are empty. So, yeah, it's...
Well, you know, in a parking lot, we pull in the morning, we're usually the only car.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I do think, I know my company was trying to come back the day after Labor Day. And then, of course, we had the big spike in COVID cases again with the Delta variant. And so then they delayed it to October. And then they announced, okay, we're just going to delay it indefinitely. So, but we're going back at some point. So is that going to be, you know, January 2nd? Is it going to be April 1st? I have no idea. But we're going back at some point. So I do think we will come back from this.
But it's not like the numbers we're fishing around here this morning. And again, I think that the, as you know, Maddie, more than anybody, because you're here all the time, my theme is we can't get the right answers if we don't at least ask the right questions. Like, okay, we're down to only needing 60% of the people we needed before, and now we can't fill the 60%. How many people are we? I mean, so what is it? What does that actually mean? I mean, it's a massive change of knowledge. It's not like everybody reopened. And we're missing 10% of the workers. I mean, 60% were reopened, and that might be a stretch. And we're missing, so we got to be missing 50% of the workers, or 60, right? For there to be shortages. That's an incredible amount of people.
Well, and even in the hotel industry, as an example, I mean, I read statistics, you know, 75% to 80% drop in, you know, turning over hotel rooms at the peak of the pandemic scare. And even if those places reopen, and some of them were closed, but if they come back at all, they're not going to be, you know, filling up every weekend. Even for something like the marathon here last weekend, just it isn't going to equate to a, you know, 80% jump in the business that they used to have been experiencing. So they're not going to be hiring anybody. You got the people like Matt says, you know, the public transportation is about half full. A lot of that is due to the fact that there's no jobs, and from what I hear, a lot of people just don't want to ride public transportation anymore, even if they have jobs. And I know a lot of people who have sworn off riding buses and L trains because they've had bad experiences, and they don't want to tempt fate, and they're still working, but they've done an end run around public transportation. That's not good for business either. But I think, you know, you're right. There's no way to kind of get a comparison of where these people have gone, and they clearly are not back where they were, and there's no sense that they're coming back anytime soon. So where are they? And it doesn't mean that they've all died, but they've made other decisions apparently, and we should know what those decisions are and get a handle on what's driving it. And we don't seem to be at all concerned about what these trends really, you know,
well, I think
that, for the future.
I think that there's probably blame and credit for everywhere, but I think what Kim Fox is doing with this idea of mutual combatants. Now, if two people decide to shoot each other in a city and somebody in the middle gets murdered, it's okay because you're just returning fire. I mean, I don't know where the hell she gets that, but I think the thing that she's burying, I mean, obviously the people in the white neighborhoods aren't happy about it, but she's absolutely destroying the black neighborhoods. I think that's where massive amounts of people are leaving. And when you see the addresses keep going further west in Inglewood, it's because nobody's left in the old Inglewood. I think the amount of people leaving from these African American neighborhoods is dramatic. I mean, the statistics have been showing it, but I think in the last, I'd love to find out, John. Do you think anybody even knows or cares how many people have left the city and in what neighborhoods in the last 18 months? I think those numbers would be astounding.
I do too. I think if people had any kind of support network elsewhere, whether in the suburbs or out of state, they took advantage of it. And some of it was maybe the spur of the moment. If you were renting an apartment somewhere, you could just walk, you know, and a lot of people in these old dense neighborhoods rent. They don't, you know, own anything. So it would be a pretty easy decision for them to make. We got everything conspiring against us. The jobs are in the toilet. We got crime on every corner around us. We can't trust our kids to go to school, even if we had face-to-face instruction, without being shot at. So why are we here at all? You know, and you couldn't blame anybody for just picking up and walking. to go anyplace else. Well, it's got to be better somewhere a couple miles away, or, you know, a couple hundred miles away if you have any kind of options.
Well, people will live anywhere. I mean, Reed, the guy I was at dinner with last night, lived in Afghanistan for 10 years. If the money's good enough and it's relatively safe where you are, you're going to get people, right? I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, people live in New York, which I love New York, or I used to, but it costs an arm and a leg to live there, but you're making 200 grand, wherever else you're making 80, you know, so it was worth it to you, right? The reason why you put up with Chicago is because you had a much better job here. I mean, my grandmother used to have brothers that came and slept in her house when she had 6 kids, you know, in a twin bed somewhere, just because they were making so much more money here than in Columbus. People do anything if your income is better. But all of a sudden, you pull that piece out and you say, well, what am I living here for? But, Jen, I got to believe that this, somehow or another, even the people Kevin and I met the night you ditched us, we were over at Marty Anthony. Remember that night? You were supposed to be there? Yeah. And John was a no-show, man. Imagine that, you know, just kind of thing. The lady was talking about the 300 people less at her high school, and I thought, Manny, we were in a car together. Didn't they say there were 20,000 less kids in Chicago public schools, in high schools or something? I thought it was that number. It might have been 12.
The official number the CPS put out was 14,000 fewer students in 2021, start of the school year, than in 20.
That's high school and grammar school?
2020 was like 18,000 below the year before, so you're looking at 30,000 fewer students in the two-year period.
That's high school and grammar school, or just?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's combined.
All right, so the thought is, that somewhere along the line, 29,000 kids are at home and just not coming to school. I'm thinking, John, I don't think that, unless I have somebody to go out and actually track these people down, do a survey, I think they're just gone. You know, somebody's moving to Texas and all these other places.
Well, a factor too, and this is kind of, you know, part of the bigger problem with the school numbers. There's no truant officers in the Chicago public schools. There haven't been any for a long time now. The fact that there's a drop in numbers of students, it you would think immediately, well, that means those students are going to school in some other district. The families have moved and they're registered somewhere else. But I really think you're looking at a slice of the population that doesn't go to school, and that they are not, they're still here, but they're not showing up in any kind of measurable quantity as being part of a column in the labor force. They're not students. They should be students. By law, they should be in some kind of a school. And before it, you would be able to use the number of school enrollments as a helpful way of checking the accuracy of your population numbers. Because if there was a gigantic drop in school kids, you would assume, well, those kids are still in school but somewhere else. And now we have to believe they're not in school, and nobody seems to care.
But some of these programs, Shannon, have ever eaten breakfast and lunch and everything at the school? How do you just bail out of that if you don't have any food at home?
Well, you know, that's you would think that would be enough to attract, you know, kids to go there, but you know, I just think that, you know, you can't expect that to be the saving factor here. That isn't going to be enough to keep these kids in school. Or maybe they're in school for breakfast and then they walk, or they vanish. Or I think it's more likely they're just not there; they're on the street.
Well, we know there's a bulge, what I've heard anyway, in some of the public or the suburban public schools, the close-in suburbs. So some people maybe have gone there. But my point, John, is, you know, we're not going to solve this on the show this morning. But the point is, I hope somebody, instead of just, you know, dribbling from their mouth all day long on stuff that nobody cares about, I wish somewhere along the line, these are pretty serious things. And when, you know, a rumor I hear is our building downtown got some huge up, I don't know if it was in a tax bill, Jan, or it was just in an assessment of the building or something. Anybody who thinks these buildings are going to pay more than they did 2 years ago, what planet are you on? I mean, you got to be, even somebody listening to the radio from Alpha Centauri's moon wouldn't realize this is a time to raise taxes. I mean, I realize the city's broke, but I also know you can't get blood out of a turnip. And I don't know where you fall, I don't know where that knife falls. But I mean, what do you just lob them out there and hope somebody's dumb enough to pay, or what? I mean, what are we doing here?
Saturday night, Tom, my brother and I went to our delayed by 1 year 50th high school reunion.
thought you were saying 50th birthday. I'm sorry, who are you kidding?
The interesting thing was, you know, these are the ones who came. There was about 35 people, I think, from the class of 1970 there. A lot of people passed on. A lot of people moved away. But I hadn't been in one of these in quite a while, so it was an interesting event. And all the classes are welcome, and they honor the, you know, the 25-year, the 50-year people. It was a little extra stuff. But it was interesting beforehand and afterwards, the way the groups would kind of get together and talk and remember and migrate. You'd move around from different groups.
This is Mount Carmel, correct, for those that don't know?
Right, Mount Carmel High School on the south side. But every conversation inevitably turned, you know, to what's happening in the city. And the people who have, you know, they're empty nesters, they've moved downtown. A lot of them, I was amazed at how many people are living in the Loop. The kids are grown, they got grandkids living all over the country, and they're, you know, living in the South Loop, or they're, you know, near North Side, high-rise living, and that seemed to be the next step in their lives from wherever they were living before, and then near in suburbs or in the city, and they're just heartsick at what's going on. Everybody was kind of, I think, struck afterwards at how the conversations all came back to what's going on with the city. And there seems to be no way out of it. And the demoralization I heard was kind of scary to me. I knew that this stuff happened, and I knew that people, you know, think about it a lot. But to get everybody kind of together, and that's the first thing they start talking about. This is the uppermost in people's minds. And these are the people who, you know, come from working class families, you know, three or four generations. They're here because they like the city. They're still here because they like the city. But I think a lot of them see no way out of this, and it just—it's
you have people, Dan,
crushing disappointment to hear just how everybody felt the same way about this.
We have people. I mean, Audrey doesn't usually do a lot of work downtown, but once in a while she gets a listing, and she had got one at 200 North Dearborn. I had to go down there, being the good boyfriend, and take pictures of the place. Actually, I brought somebody with who knew how to take pictures with their cell phone and sent them, because I have no idea how to do that, nor do I want to learn. I've taken about four pictures of my phone. They're all of my feet when I hit the wrong button. So, so if you want to take, you know, see my feet, you can, you know, in shoes, you can, whatever. So, anyway, she sells it to one group where the family's daughter is moving to Chicago for a job in the near north, across the river, over by Trump Tower. And, so they buy it like sight unseen. You know, we'll just take it because it's got a 39 Ford Blue right down the river. I mean, real nice. And she doesn't have a car, so one drawback, the place, whoever bought it didn't buy a parking place, so there's no parking, but that's, you know, this girl didn't care. Well, they come here to see the place, and they walk out the front door, and they see the gang hanging around on Lake and State Street, and they go, no friggin' way is my daughter living here. I mean, I'm not paying this kind of dough for her to walk out on a street like this. They have a bunch of bums hanging around. She's got to walk through this. I mean, how does she walk home from, you know, a restaurant at midnight to this place? I mean, it's not happening. And, there's all kinds of dorms a block away from there where people's daughters live there and so forth. And sons. It's not like the sons are impervious. And the guy goes, I'm out. So, but then she ended up, an investor called, and for like a reasonable amount less money, the investor says, okay, it's a nice place and it's, nice building, and you know, I think Chicago will come back in 10 years, and I got a bunch of dough, and I'll buy the place here and rent it out. So, you know, so somebody's taking the view that however bad it is, somehow we'll straighten it all out in 5 years, and it'll be the place everybody wants to be again. And I tell you what, right? If I go have a, you know, right, park, I park right across the expressway over on Well Street here, and I'll leave the, if I have a meeting with my gang at the series or someplace, I walk to my truck, and it's two and a half. Every night now that I go, I walk maybe by two, three homeless people, I'll never see another person. There's another, I walk by two bars that got like two people in it. Restaurants are closed. I mean, this was the most vibrant community in the city 10 years ago. There's nobody here. And then there's no place open. This morning, I cook breakfast for the show for people at PTI. There's no alternative. You cannot get a breakfast around here. All for like three blocks.
That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And we're talking about, there used to be with the exchanges here, within 1,000 yards of our front door, there had to be, how many people used to work here? 20,000? 25? Where the Dunkin' Donuts was the, it had to be the highest priced piece of real estate in terms of revenue in the world, that place. All the restaurants on Van Buren, half of them are closed. I mean, we're not even, but this becomes kind of long term. And when you have a tax base, when you enter this stuff already in trouble, it's like the Bears quarterback with Oakland trying to take him out, entering the game kind of a little wobbly to start with, right, Matty? I mean, he wasn't full strength at the beginning of the game. And then you got the helmet right in the ribs to say hello to start his day, right? And after that, every guy who got near him couldn't wait to put an elbow on his face. And football being what it is, even the refs should figure out after the fifth time something's going on here and warn the coach or do something, but they don't do that. College, it's even worse because they don't care if you put anybody out because they're not paying you. But John, just in terms of the demographics, I mean, I don't, is everybody continuing to move to Tennessee? What do you do for a living in Tennessee, for God's sake?
Yeah, I don't see that as being, you know, the long-term solution to this, because those states are going to be in the same boat if you get people like Kim Fox as your state's attorney.
Yeah.
maybe they've been able to avoid that up until now, but you got people like the Soros Foundation or places like the Soros Foundation pushing candidates and piling money on them to get people like Kim Fox who see their jobs as prosecutors. They're really, their focus seems to be on what crimes will I not prosecute.
I would bet you, though, Jan, if in fact, one thing I'll say about you conservative types, finally, everything is not Hillary Clinton's fault. Now it's Soros. It's Soros' fault. There always has to be somebody.
He's got more money.
He's right. There's always got to be somebody. There's always got to be a figurehead as to who. If you're on the other side, if you're on the liberal side, everything that goes that the Republicans do is Trump's fault, even though half the Republicans don't even like Trump. So, I mean, there's always got to be a name. But, I mean, if Soros came into the show, would you actually come in one morning and talk to him? But if he was sitting here, do you honestly think, if we asked the guy, hey, buddy, we understand you gave this lady a lot of dough. Did you think for a second that if two people started shooting at people out of cars and somebody in the middle got killed, it would be okay because they're co-combatants? I can't believe he would say, I think that's okay.
Well, I think he'd say, that's my mission here, Tom.
To do what? To make sure people get killed with nothing?
Well, to turn people, you know, one thing that this whole thing does is it makes people who are trying to hold things together angry at the people who are pulling it apart, which is, that's always been Soros's.
But nobody ever thought, even people that supported her, nobody ever thought that she would come up with this half-ass idea that discharging a gun in a city, well, I'm going to forget that being a felony as
mutual
long as...
Mutual combat.
I mean, there's no way that was part of her campaign. There's no way that was part of...
That's Soros' shtick, too, though, Tom. If the people who have run on that kind of a ticket, Obama didn't run on that kind of a ticket either time he ran.
No.
But certainly, once he got in, the kind of stuff he was doing made you think, did this guy have a brain transplant, or did he forget what his platform was, or did he forget who voted him in? Did he forget about pulling out of Iraq and Afghanistan? Because he never did, but that's why he got elected in 2020.
I've known you for an awful long time.
All these people, it's kind of like, you know, the Fabian socialists. You got to do it easily. You can't put all of your most radical ideas in your platform and run around and
well, I understand that, but I mean, I'm saying
you won't get elected. You got to go at it in a subversive way.
But I know, I've known this John Flanagan guy for a long time, and I know that you, in a lot of parts of your anatomy, are a bleeding heart liberal in a lot of ways. And I'm going to say that you were as upset with the way the bail system has worked for the many years you've been a lawyer. It doesn't mean that you let everybody out.
No, that's...
right?
Of course.
Wait a minute.
The system, whatever inequalities or unfairness in it, I mean, this is the whole... The rejection of that means that you have to now be opposed to any kind of a meritocracy. That there has to be equal outcomes for unequal people. And whether you have this IQ or that IQ, or whether you have this advantage physically over somebody else, it can't matter in the long run to these ideologues like Carl and Lou were talking about last week. You've all got to be in the same boat, and if somebody scores higher in a school, there must be something wrong with that school, because you all should be scoring exactly the same way. I mean, it's totally insane to think that way.
But I mean, you
but it is it's insanity now that's being pushed on everybody. And if you have anybody who's better qualified than the next person, you're punished for being better qualified.
Well, I'm with you on most of that, but what I'm saying is the thing that bothers me totally, and I'm in the middle these days, and I really am, because I don't like either side's crazy diatribe. If I was going to try and fix the bail system and say, well, just because you don't have enough dough, I can't keep you here, when the white guy who was just here just bailed himself out of his cocaine problem, for $10,000 that you don't have. I mean, there's an unfairness to that. Okay, but now when we start getting past cocaine and drug issues, possession, and we start getting towards more felonies, and we're talking about robberies and things like that, if I decide with other people's, whatever, I guess I win the election, that gives me a mandate in some idiot's minds, and maybe not mine. But if I decide to try this reform, and John, I'm a guy, as you know, that when you trade, every position you put on, you don't have anywhere near the ego to think they're all going to work. But what you do is you keep your eye on them like a hawk, and the minute they don't work, you change them and you adjust to something that might be better. So I don't have a problem with trying to do something different with the bail system and saying the people, if they only had a little more money, they'd be out of here. Let's let them out of here anyway and maybe a little bit at a time and see what happens. But what I don't want to hear is that 3 years later, three quarters of the people, or wherever the number is, since I can't seem to find it, that we let out here on bail that had maybe are waiting for a felony trial, that three quarters of them are committing another felony by the time the trial comes up. I need to know that feedback to know if my crap is working or not. And if I find out that every one of these guys is going out there and doing something again, well, then I need to change this, like, really quickly. And that's what I don't see. I don't see Pritzker, when, okay, we're going to close all the places for COVID. At the end of the day, wait a minute, we closed the furniture store, but now Target's selling more furniture. Well, that ain't right. I didn't intend that. But now 2 weeks later, it looks to me like that's what's happened. I need to fix it. I don't blame anybody for making a mistake on their first policy. Because if you do that, all you get a bunch of people are being frozen and don't want to try something. But when you try something, you're supposed to keep your eyeball on it and say, well, this isn't working. Why is this guy closed from selling blue jeans and yet Sam's is selling the blue jeans? I mean, this
is why are the Hyatt health clubs all staying open and every other health club has to close?
Right. So I'm saying it's at some point you need to have your wits about you and not be afraid to try something as best you can, but then you got to keep an eye on it, okay? And that's the part I don't get. I mean, this must be obvious to everybody, including Kim Fox, that this is not working.
Well, you got to think, too, though, why was Kim Fox taking money from Soros, and what did Soros tell her he wanted? I suspect Kim Fox will tell you in a very guarded conversation that this is panning out exactly the way it's supposed to.
And he wants exactly the city to be an armed camp?
Is there.
He wants the city to be...
The globalist agenda that Soros has pushed is about weakening the strengths that this country or any other once prosperous country had, where they had a kind of a civil society. There was, money to be made.
How does
people worked hardest. The whole dream of being a homeowner and a business owner and everything else, that's anathema to the global.
Well, before I accuse somebody of wanting anarchy, I at least want to be able to ask them. Is that really what you want?
Nope. If they ask you, they're not going to listen to your answer to them. Then they won't ask you either, by the way.
But there can't be anybody, even if this guy is a senile old goat, there can't be anybody that wants 40 shootings a week, and that's too many, and the expressway where people are firing at each other and anybody in the middle is just fair game. There's no way the man can want that.
Oh, but it's a means to an end, Tom.
What's the end?
Believe me, in a globalist agenda, people are the most disposable asset of all.
Well,
in a Bill Gates agenda, when it comes to, we've got the biggest problem we have is too many people.
You think
people like Bill Gates cares if there's a couple million fewer people than there were? That he'd throw a party.
Well, I mean, I mean
that's the crazy thinking we have. But when you have crazy people with all this money and power, you can't be surprised when we get all these crazy results.
Well, I would work real hard at finding ways to cut down on the people who these places being this big. And I would do it through a lot of different sort of mechanisms. Once in a while we get emails where people ask me, you gotta find a way to make it not a taxable benefit for a company to save more, to keep more money than they have, than they need, just because of taxes, so they get bigger than God. I mean, you need to do something, either make dividends non-taxable, so you hope that the owners of the place demand more share, or the other way of doing it, which probably isn't as good, I don't think, is that you have a corporate tax rate, and the money you don't pay out at dividends, you have a retained earnings tax. So you do the mirror image of it. To say a corporate tax rate is 20%, but oh, by the way, if it's 20% if you hand it out to the shareholders. If you keep it, it's 35 on the part you keep, which sort of gets you to the same place, right?
Right.
But you can't, you don't need, I mean, I don't think he's a bad, nobody just talks about him like they do Sorbus. I don't think there's no way that you should ever have a guy like Warren Buffett who's never given anybody a dime. When it's there, though, the fact that the guy has so much money in his company means that he doesn't know what to do with it. If he doesn't know what to do with it, he should give it to the people who are the owners. If he knows what to do with it and he can do a good job for them, then yeah, I have no problem with him. That's what corporate people do. If I had a big corporation and I can make 15% return and my shareholders can only make 10 on their own, I'm better off keeping it than giving it to them. But today I don't even know what to do, and I just want to give it to them on principle, and the tax law favors me doing that, to someday I've got $40 bazillion in the place and become more powerful than God just because. I mean, I don't think that's right at all. And yet we've encouraged that. When I was in Notre Dame taking business classes, they said we got to find a way to have people to not have this double taxation on dividends because these companies are getting too big and these people too powerful. Not that anybody doesn't want a company that does a really good job to be big. I don't think bigness is a problem, but I think it's a problem for Merck or Pfizer. I'm not saying all they do. They do some research still, but all they do is look around for other people that do research better than them. That person can't get through the FDA, so they have to sell out to these places. And the chairman now, rather than being a chemist and maybe somebody who invented something when he first got there, is just some guy looking around for people to make sure they never get through the FDA, and so have to sell to these guys at a discount, and they just get bigger and bigger doing that. John, it's unhealthy, it's immoral, and yet...
Well, and it goes beyond that, too, Tom. You've got people like, places like Merck and Pfizer, too, that are dictating national policy through the FDA and the CDC. It's clear to me that Big Pharma for a long time has controlled these supposed watchdog quality control agencies that are anything but that. They're regulatory agencies that are already co-opted by the people who are pushing whatever agenda they can get away with in order to maximize their profits worldwide. And it's absolutely, I mean, it's a casebook study what's happened in the last year and a half, where you've got the entire world economy upended.
It's just
for the benefit of companies that are making.
Yeah, it's just
like
an extension.
And that includes Walmart and Amazon, big box stores generally. The rest of the world is just in tatters because of this. But you can't make me think that this wasn't because of some grand design where all of a sudden people said, we got the power. Well, we don't really care about the pain and suffering that our power causes if we can get more power.
Well, for how many years, John, did when Microsoft had some issue with, Maddie and I were just starting up the show. They had some issue and, it was an antitrust issue of some kind. And I don't know, and they were in trouble. There was some chance they could actually, you know, get sent to the principal for the paddle. And all of a sudden, all you heard in all the business articles, Matt, you remember this, every Newsweek, the business shows are like going, these guys just don't get it at Microsoft. They're in Seattle. They think they just do a nice job. They're holier than thou. And Bill Gates always had a problem with, hiring lobbyists, and so I remember seeing graphs, charts of people on TV, put on TV, of Google, you know, Fannie Mae, of all the biggest lobbyist companies in the country, and Microsoft wasn't even in like the top 25, even though they were one of the top 10 biggest companies. And how this was a major weakness in Bill Gates' arsenal, that he didn't think he needed to do this stuff in Washington, and when it came time to where he thought they were coming after him, he didn't have any puppets to pull or anything like that. He was excoriated for not playing the game. And all of a sudden, he decided maybe he was watching. All of a sudden, they hired all these lobbyists. They went from 50th to 10th or something. And now all of a sudden, the guy's got more power than yet. Well, John, he learned our game. We have to stop that game somehow. I mean, Bill Gates, he was led down that road. It's like you and I, if you ran for office and really felt that you'd be better than the next guy, you'd take a check from Soros. I don't think you'd do whatever what he wanted. The guy who was the best at taking a check and not doing anything you wanted him to do is Bill Clinton. He gave him a check. He forgot about you on the way out the door. I think that guy.
We need more Bill Clinton stuff.
But I'm saying at least when George Bush actually felt he had to go into Iraq, he had to do the things that people told him to do. So what did he do? He put us in a war on a credit card. He didn't raise taxes.
The lobbyists are controlling the whole scenario here, and you're beholden to the people that are paying your bills. So.
Well, and if you want to become a senator, and all of a sudden you're taking money from all these people. I mean, the drug companies have dropped their way down. I read something, Manny, when did we report on this? About a year ago? Of how many people in the state legislature now in Illinois have gotten money from big drug companies?
Probably everyone.
Not everyone, but 10 years ago.
Enough to make it look like it's 90%+.
Right, but 10 years ago, they didn't do it in the states.
They didn't have to, because that wasn't part of their agenda. Well, they didn't need that at that point. Now I think they need it when they realize they're in such a powerful position that maybe they didn't even bargain for 10, 20
but
years ago.
But that's,
I suspect a lot of them did. This is part of just a long range plan that's bigger than anything
the politicians were
putting together.
But instead of criticizing it, which we should, we got a dash here. But somehow or another, if we really give a crap, we need to get a bunch of people, whether it's 10,000 or whatever it is, with just as much money and shove crap in the guy's other pocket that's $4 more than in his one pocket. It's the only way to fight it. You don't just say, oh, but these poor guys, they laugh at us. You think they care about Stocks and Jacks? Let's criticize them. The guy at Pfizer, you don't know who the hell we are, and nor does he care. And if we died tomorrow, he wouldn't even send a flower. Matter of fact, he'd stomp on the grave, probably. But I mean, we have to realize what we're fighting. I mean, you don't walk into the football game with the Bears without a helmet, right? And say you're going to be a pro football player.
You try to protest, even Tom. It's going to be called an insurrection by the media.
I think it's got to be. It's got to be.
They're not controlled by you and me. They're controlled by.
It's got to be done.
And all these others.
It's got to be done how they're doing it, Jen.
You could try to get back at them, and it's all going to be twisted against you.
It's got to be done with money. And it takes a long time and a lot of dough. SP Futures down only 14 now. John, you're causing causing this thing to rally by telling you don't like Soros. NASDAQ Futures is down 92. Talk to you later in the week. Be right back, Mr. Mike Hart. Talk about this volatility, which you talked about a lot at dinner last night. Wish Mike had been there. We'll be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures now down 12 and a quarter. We were down 20 some when it came in, so we're leaking back up. NASDAQ futures down 84. Dow futures only down 61. Individual stocks, not really much of anything. We had Chevron, Texaco, of course, with oil being up, which we'll talk about in a second. It's up 1.25. We got Goldman Sachs up 1. We got JP Morgan up 1. We've got Microsoft down 250 to 292, but still up in the 280 something it was earlier in last week. We got Salesforce down $1.68, so nothing really crazy going on there. Over in Asia, there is some stuff crazy. Nikkei is up 449, it's 1.6%. Shanghai, which was closed for a week and then opened on Friday, going down 46 cents, so they're flat. Hang Seng, however, is up 487, which is 2%. It was up 3% at one point. And they thought maybe Mike will know who these guys are. M-E-I-T-U-A-N, Meituan Shares? And then they say Singapore's travel-related stocks are way up, and I don't know. Does that mean we're all going to Singapore? Maybe. I'm not so sure about that. We can go visit John Lee if we went over there. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 92.6%. That's down more than it was last time we went through here. FTSE's up 14.2. CAC around down 18.2. So other than the DAX, pretty quiet over in Europe. As a way of review, Friday, Dow was down 8, so call that flat. S&P down 8. NASDAQ down 74. So Friday was probably the dullest day of the week. Bonds, 10-year up only 4/32 on, but still over 1.6, 1.61. The Bund, positive 0.02, which is minus 0.11 now. I don't know if we're going to make it to zero. We'll see what Mike says. Japan, positive 0.09, pushing towards positive 0.10. Oil, up and away, 227, 81.62. Brent up 186, 84.25. Natural gas up 4 cents, 5.61. RBOB up 4 cents. 240, and second thought, Maddie, I should have filled up the Suburban instead of only getting like 12 gallons. Gold down $1, 17.56, silver down 11 cents, 22.59. Copper, however, up 7 cents to 434. And we got platinum up 260 to 1,030. So everything's going up except gold. And we've got crypto, put Bitcoin up 1,000 to 56,477. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of earlier crashes this morning are all clear now, so that's good news. We had a big crash on the outbound Kennedy at Bryn Mawr that had all lanes blocked a couple of hours ago. That is clear now. Some resulting congestion on the outbound side, but that accident is clear. And then the crash on the Dan Ryan at 95th Street on the inbound side, that is clear as well. So good news is there. In fact, the Southside expressways are moving at pretty reasonable travel times right now for a Monday morning. No issues on the Stevenson or Eisenhower either, just normal traffic volumes there. So you can tell it's a holiday for some people here on Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples Day or whatever you want to call it. Because traffic is definitely lighter than normal. One crash in the area is out in suburban Addison, Lake Street at North Addison Road. There is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, some sunshine and clouds mixed early, and then we'll have rain coming in this afternoon. Could be some heavy stuff, too. A high of 78 with thunderstorms this afternoon. Right now it's overcast and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 86. Right now it's clear and 62. In sports, the Bears are now 3-2 and have won 2 in a row as they beat up on the Las Vegas Raiders on the road yesterday. 20-9 was the final in that one. The Cardinals are undefeated. They're 5-0 after beating San Francisco 17-10. Sunday Night Football, the Buffalo Bills look like they might be the best team in the NFL, Chief. They went to Kansas City and beat up on the Chiefs 38-20. Major League Baseball, White Sox are still alive. They ended up coming back from a 6-1 actually a 5-1 deficit to take a 6-5 lead, and then they ultimately pulled away, beating the Astros 12-6. Sox now trail 2-1 in the best of 5 series, and they'll look to even it up this afternoon, weather permitting. 2:37 Central Time first pitch as Carlos Rodon takes the hill. Lastly, the Chicago Sky, who, by the way, they play at the new Wind Trust Arena, which we should have known that. They did used to play at UIC, like I said.
That's DePaul's place?
Yeah, but now they're at Wind Trust.
That's a nice place.
Absolutely, yeah. And they are now 2 games away from being WNBA Finals champions, as they won Game 1 of the Finals over the Phoenix Mercury, 91-77.
Who's the lady they signed... who's been an all-star forever, and she's like later in his career, but she's having a terrific year even though.
Yeah, Candace Parker.
Yeah.
She's from Naperville originally and played at Tennessee with under the late Pat Summitt. And
I remember her. Weren't they in the finals with Notre Dame when she was there?
Very possible, yeah, very possible. But she
had a great program.
Olympic medalist and, great basketball player and wanted to come back to Chicago. And so, in the twilight of her career, and they signed her, and she's still good.
Amazingly well-spoken.
Oh, yeah. And her brother played in the NBA, too, for a long time.
Oh, really?
Anthony Parker, yeah.
Was she better than him? Like, what's her name was better than the guy from Indianapolis?
She was definitely better in her game than he was in his game. I don't know if she could beat him one-on-one, but she's, yeah, definitely more talented.
Who's the guy that's like almost a Hall of Famer for the Pacers?
You're talking about Cheryl Miller and Reggie Miller.
Yeah, I said Reggie Miller was the greatest player in the world. The only person better than him was his sister. But Cheryl Miller was spectacular.
Oh, yeah, 100 points in a game.
Yeah, she was something. Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic, Chief. How you doing?
Well, okay, but I'm gonna make you feel a little less than fantastic here. Article by Vicky McKeever, Nobel Economics Prizes awarded to 3 U.S.-based economists, and I do not see your name here.
I did not make it. Surprisingly,
you did not make the cut.
Actually, not surprised.
Economists David Card, Joshua Angrist, and Guido Imbens. I think Guido's Italian, dude. Possibly have been accorded the Nobel Prize. And one of the guys, Card, is a professor of economics at the University of Berkeley. And Grist is a Ford professor of economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And Embed is a professor of economics at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. New insights into the labor market and showing that what conclusions about cause and effect can be drawn from natural experiments, and that the approach, they essentially used same approach in studying like labor markets as they use in medicine, which is interesting. And I'd like to read more about that, actually. They did so using natural experiments that looked at how chance events or policy changes result in groups of people being treated differently in a way that resembles clinical trials in medicine. Card had used natural experiments to analyze the effects of minimum wages, immigration, and education on the labor market. I bet his work is really good. Boy, I wonder if he'd come out. His research from the early 1990s shown, for example, that increasing the minimum wage does not necessarily lead to fewer jobs. Anyway, interesting stuff. I could have used you last night, buddy. We were talking to some people, or I was talking to some people, at the regarding the volatility and the VIX and the big trades that I had noticed. And it was interesting, but a lot of people don't necessarily get the connection. Right now, if you listen to the TVs, when the VIX goes up, everybody's convinced that the market's going down. And I was trying to explain that that's a recent phenomenon, but in the agricultural world, in the futures world, sometimes that means it's going up because the panic is to the upside, not the downside. And that just because,
right.
And it, we and I have talked about those trades in November. They said, well, what are those actually showing? I said, well, what you're saying is the conjecture is that it means that the market's going down in November. I said, it doesn't really mean that because I'm going to talk about this with Mike tomorrow, but when the VIX is hanging around the 20 number anyway, that the market is already kind of geared for some movement. I said, but if the bonds, if the interest rates say they run to 2.5 by February or 3. I said the market could just, even if the market, reprices and goes down, the market could go down 1% every 2 weeks from now to February, and that's no VIX move. That's not, I said, when the VIX moves up, it's not just market movement. It's chaotic movement. People are predicting, like almost chaos, when you say the VIX is going to go to 50, it doesn't mean that the market goes down 1% a week for 10 weeks.
Part of it is, Chief, that volatility doesn't necessarily tell us direction. It's a plus or minus calculation. So So when we see a VIX of 20, think about it as over the course of the next year, we could see plus or minus 20% move in the S&P 500. That's what the option market is telling us
right.
about movement. But you're right, it's not conjecture that it's moving to the downside necessarily. Typically, we do see that relationship. Downside movement equals higher volatility, but really it's the velocity of the movement. If we see fast movement to the upside, we're going to see just the exact same thing. And we saw it in a lot of the meme stocks earlier this year,
right.
where volatility actually expanded, and it was all to the upside.
Yeah, volatility is like 3-something in those things, half of them. 300 yeah. or 200, it was massive. But let's just say, Mike, I think you understand that when you come on this show or any other, because I'm sure you're on a bunch of other places, it's not what you say, it's what people hear. And let's just say the entire investment right. community is convinced that VIX goes up when the market goes down, it goes down when the market goes up. And you and I could talk to a blue to the face in front of a seminar, and you know what? I don't know that we're going to sink in.
Well, I mean, look at this year. We're sitting at 20, and it's hard to argue that we're down all that much right now.
Right,
we're sitting above 20 in the VIX. That's historically, we're five percentage points higher than what we see historically as like a mean average for the VIX. So we are sitting at a higher level of uncertainty. And no surprise, I mean, you look at the world today, there is a lot of uncertainties out there. And you might even argue that the VIX is sitting relatively low for some of the outcomes that we may potentially see.
Yeah. Well, where do you place, I mean, I've been, you know, I know for a long time I was a voice in the wilderness on this, inflation. I'm getting a few people that are coming my way, which, by the way, I really don't want to be right on this, but where do you stand on the worldwide implications of this, where my brother Dan is, president of PTI Securities, that when you start getting these cereal prices, which is, it's not really cereal, it's the price mm-hmm. of grain around the world, when you start getting that appreciably over 5 hours a day, it means that huge swaths of humanity can't feed themselves, because basically in a big chunk of the world, $5 a day is kind of your disposable income for food. And if you can't, you know, even buy grain to fill you up, we're not talking about steaks.
Right.
You've got a problem. And the last time that happened, he showed me, was basically Arab Spring, and there's revolutions all over the damn place. Where do you stand on that? Are you an agreeer? Do you think we're getting close to something like that? Or, I mean, clearly inflation, depending on who you are, I mean, if you're the guy who has his input prices come up 10%, you run on TV and you complain about it like you're being stuck and raise your prices 30%, I got news for you. You're not being hurt, right? But not everybody can do
right.
it.
Right. Well, there's yeah. a disconnect. I think there's definitely a disconnect right now between what we're seeing in inflation. We know the inflation's rising at a much faster rate than the economy can keep up with. And I don't think the laws of economics get thrown out the window here. You know, you look around the world, the question becomes, what happens when inflation rises around the world? You know, we know what happens when one economy basically devalues their currency relative to other economies. But what happens when every economy, and we're talking the major global economies, do the exact same thing? Every economy right now is at least devaluing their money, you know, making money cheap and available, and it's also leading to what we know is a certainty, which is going to be inflation. So I think there's a real disconnect between where we're going to end up, and I think that voice in the wilderness is getting louder. People are starting to notice that inflation could be a real big problem.
Well, especially for people
in the near future.
For people who don't get, I mean, I'm going to say that, you know, I get the stuff on the Social Security and what my Social Security would be, and it's roughly $2,000 a month. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you know, if I decided to get it, it's $2,000 a month. Now I know that if inflation starts percolating at 10% a year, which is probably a little higher than my guess is, but to make the numbers average, that in 10 years my $2,000 is worth less than $1,000 in buying power
right.
10 years from now. That's a huge hit to anybody. I mean, it's a massive hit. And I don't think, I think we've lost all, just the vernacular. We don't even recognize that because it's been so long. It's.
I think that's a great example. You know, like a lot of this stuff gets sort of lost in the weeds and lost in the numbers. But that's a real example of how money devalues itself and how inflation can really cause economic harm. And you can break it down to, dollars and cents.
Well, you know, it's talk about a weird story. And we used to do a lot of these seminars, back when people really wanted, how can I put this politically correctly? It used to be people really wanted to learn how to trade options. So there were all kinds of, and there's a few. You guys still do some stuff. It's not like nobody does. There's not as many people giving, serious option seminars where people will take a week off work and learn how to go trade them, and you start at the beginning and you get fairly complicated with all kinds of materials and stuff. Well, we never did the seminars after 91 was when we became a brokerage firm, because it's very difficult to advertise if you're a broker dealer. You can't say anything good or else you can't advertise.
You're regulated.
Yeah. So basically we were just guest speakers on how the floor worked, and we'd bring people down for mock trading and those kinds of things and show them floor tours. So we weren't part of the seminar, but we just, we're part of getting people acquainted. And the CBOE was part of it because they'd let us do the mock trading and so forth. Anyway, it's pretty nice. Well, one group we had was all these pretty big power brokers from Mexico. And Friday night, after the guys would have the seminar, the people who hung over till Saturday hung around till Saturday. I made sure they were hung over. And so we'd go to the dear departed Excelsior. We'd get a big table, and everybody go over there and drink massive drinks on Friday night, right? And everybody's staying across the streets. So it was no big deal. I had to stagger 100 yards. And there was this group of people from Mexico. And they had just devalued their currency that week, back when, Mexico used to officially do that. So I'm saying it's 94, maybe 93, somewhere in there. And,
okay.
So I go, I feel sorry for you guys because you guys, devalued your currency this week. And the guy goes, why are you feeling sorry for us? And I go, isn't that kind of a problem if you're a Mexican citizen? Well, not for us. if you're in with the right guys, it's going to happen, and you take your money and you convert it into dollars the night before. So if you devalue, devalue it for 10%, you come back, we now have, the guy next door has 10% less and we got 10% more. So we're now 20% richer than the guy next door. And I'm going, here's a guy who studied over in Chicago. I never dreamed it would be that slimy where you'd actually tell people to go get the other currency the night before. And so I'm sitting there going, inflation, devalued currencies, it's obviously very important, if you're in on the deal. I was actually, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I couldn't believe these guys said that to me. And yet now, Mike, I guess it makes sense.
Honestly, when you talk about the currency market, a lot of times it's sitting right in front of you. What is going to happen is sitting right there, and we don't see the immediate reaction in the rest of the market. It's like there's a lag effect where you see economic policy and you see currencies that move, and there's a lag. It doesn't seem like it goes directly into the market right away. It takes a little while for that real effect to take in, and then you do see it translate into market movement.
Well, Mike, why do you think I was kicking around last week, and you seem more and more interested than some of the other guests, to be perfectly blunt. Why do you think there's such a lag in the CPI stuff, where you and I, and I think a lot of the listeners, see a lot of inflation that you don't? Is it just a lag in the system? Because I saw the same thing back in the 70s and early 80s. Is it just a lag in the guys doing the research down to the very, down to the, basically the gnat's ass of, rice and flour and, whole milk versus skim milk? The guys that go into every conceivable letter of detail, that if you dig into the CPI report, you're astounded by the amount of work that goes into it. Do you think the process is, it takes 6 months, 8 months, a year for the price of milk to go up before it it gets to where it's noticed by these people doing this, or do you think it's, oh no, we're not going to put that price increase in this much because if it goes back the next month, we don't want to alarm people. You think there are policy issues, or do you think they're just data accumulation issues?
I think it's market efficiency, and I think that's what it comes down to, is how the market prices things. And the CPI number is going to have an effect, obviously, on the market. It's a watched number, but you look at some of the CPI numbers that come out, and you would think there'd be more of an effect. And you do end up seeing that effect, but it's longer term. And I think the market is just a highly efficient machine that calculates and does things. You know, a lot of times we're looking at the next tick, and we're not looking at the next year. And I think that's what it comes down to. So I think it's sort of on the data side.
Well, I mean, just for instance, I went over it last month when it came out. When it comes out this month, we'll probably do it again. Is I think pretty much everybody's convinced that the cost of housing has gone up, what, 25% in 18 months, 2 years, somewhere in there. I mean, it's maybe even right in the last year. And, if you look at the CPI, whatever, you know, garbage they use, owner's equivalent rent or whatever the hell they use, or rent on primary residence if you're a renter, if you're an owner, it's up like 2%. Now, would you think that, now, if you're looking at that, now again, I'm trying to figure out why this,
right,
why people are buying the November VIX, is that mean that they just want to have some kind of a rolling average before they kick it up and are trying to do it in a normal way, or they just don't want to report how bad it is until one day they're going to be forced to, and maybe November is the month where that number kicks up by, you know, 8% or some stuff? I mean, I don't know. Or is it just a policy thing? We don't care. We're not going to show high inflation because we got to raise, you know, Social Security next year. I mean, do you think it's out and out fraud? Do you think it's just some sort of we think it's going to go back down, so why alarm people? Or do you think it's just, you know, it takes us 8 months to really because of our formulas to actually prove that it's happening? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I think it takes I think it takes time for these larger economic shifts that are occurring to actually trickle down into the economy, and then you do see that actually play out in real life, and the market adjusts for that. Now, if you're a believer in the efficient market hypothesis, you would say the market should be calculating that right now, and that should be calculated in. But I think there's still the uncertainty of what is going to happen over the course of the next 8 months. So while you might have a VIX sitting at 20, you don't have a market sitting at a lower level that you might think it should be sitting at.
Well, if you listen to, could they have something called an old fart index? Mike, if you had an old fart index, the older people that you have on Fox Business or CNBC that basically went through the system that are older than me, went through the entire last fiasco from 68 to 84, whatever the hell it was. Every one of those guys comes on. The first thing they say is, in their opinion, the current market maybe cannot or will not or has not discounted the effects of a bad inflation time period.
Yes.
Maybe it's because in their collective memory, it isn't there or something. I mean, like, it's like people with beachfront houses seem to forget about the intensity of the last storm and build in the same place. Is it just enough of us have lost our collective memory that we can't discount it? Is that possible? Because the market maybe doesn't know.
I think it's possible. I think the market has a memory of about 10 years and it, resets. Because I think you're right. There is something to be said about historically looking at the market, and historically we have seen these major movements. And they are accountable to these larger economic shifts. Absolutely.
Well, what do you make of, we only got like less than a minute, the bonds now going down pretty much every day in the last couple of weeks. That, of course, could change. Mm-hmm. You've got that going down. We've got some of these CPI numbers coming up, although last month wasn't so bad. And you've got the labor numbers kind of stagnant here. I mean, what do you make of this? Can we rally through this?
I think it's a recipe for volatility is what it comes down to. And I think it goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning. It's not necessarily movement to the downside, but it's the velocity of the movement I expect is going to begin to increase. And that's what the market's telling us, that we're going to see larger up and down movements in this market. It's very hard to say which direction we're heading, though. That is a tough question to answer. There's just so many components at play.
All right, you got 1 week to come up with the answer.
All right.
Take care, buddy. Next time on that Nobel Prize for you. S&P futures down 10, NASDAQ futures down 77. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4966.